Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
The 1940 college football season might be one of the most exciting to date at that point in time. Maybe one of the most exciting and competitive in college football history. Six teams vying for the championship. Who were they going to pick? We've got that Heisman Trophy winner, great plays and great players coming up in just a moment. Football History Rewind, part number 83.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to the Football History Rewind, part number 83, as we will talk about the 1940 college football season in our trek through year by year of football, the history of football. We talk about the college and the pro game in separate instances. So our next episode of Football History Rewind will be about the 1940 NFL and professional football season. But this is for the amateurs, the college football season. And there's a lot of stuff that happened during 1940. It was right on the brink of some major changes, and we'll get to that in a later episode. But before we talk about 1940 and a college football season, let's make sure you're aware of our newsletter. It comes out each and every day at 6:30 a.m. Eastern. It's totally free. You can cancel at any time. And what it brings is into your email inbox all the great history of the day in all the four major sports of American athleticism. And you're going to go back in time and read about some of the great heroes and games and Hall of Famers that were born that day, as well as some other great articles and content that we have coming up on Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch, as well as Orville Mulligan. And we also share some items from the Sports History Network as well, and some of our other friends too. We try to put some of those things in too, just to give you a well-rounded start to your day right off the bat with some great sports history. Speaking of sports history, well, let's get into that 1940 college football season and what a season it was. Let's start off with some rule changes that they had. Now, first of all, our records indicate that the chairman of the NCAA Football Rules Committee was Walter R. Oakeson. He was there from 1932 to 1943, serving in that capacity. And the committee that he chaired during this time focused on two items in making the revisions, and this is a direct correlation to Oakeson's theorem and his philosophy on football rules, and it's a good philosophy. Number one was to make the game safer for the participants. You know, player safety is at the utmost for any rules era since then, and probably before that too, because you don't want the players to get hurt. That's your biggest commodity, and Walter definitely understood that and recognized that, as well as the rest of the committee. And the second item, they were trying to make the playing field level between the offensive and defensive units. That wasn't always true in football. One or the other unit had a big advantage, and it would make it so it was unbalanced and awkward and just not an enjoyable game to watch. So the more balanced it is, the better the game is, and they recognized that back in 1940. So this is the process that was described in some texts that I've read about this 1940 season. The committee would sift through some many suggestions that would come from reputable folks like coaches and athletic directors, maybe some players and some of the committee members themselves, on what changes they could do in the areas of player safety or making a more balanced game. And then they would take and reflect to see, make sure if they did change that, it would not upset the basic integrity of the game, of the sport that it is. So they were very careful in going through these things. So first of all, they looked at substitutions, and they were still in the era of you substituted very infrequently. They didn't allow it. They were basically adopting the rules of soccer, so you only got to go in for one time during half. If you got taken out during a half, you were not allowed to return that same player. It's similar to what, you know, baseball is for a whole game. Once you sub, you're out. Very similar to that. We're a little bit of time away before we have free substitution. We'll get to that in a later episode. Also, pass interference was looked at. They were trying to redefine what pass interference was and clarify it and tightening the rules and promoting a little bit more physical game. And offsides during a kick. Again, trying to make that kicking game a little bit more fair and, you know, trying to control the kicking game. That's the wildest part of the game of football. Is that's when the crazy stuff happens. And they were also looking to seek and inject pace and excitement in the game. 1940 introduced a reasonable time rule, effectively outlawing plotting scrum plays that had bogged down college football for years. So you had to try to advance the ball to the line of scrimmage in a reasonable amount of time. You couldn't, stay back behind the line I don't know what you do, run around, nobody could tackle you, or, go into a major scrum. So you have to try to advance the ball where they stop it. That's sort of what's evolved into our forward progress rule. When forward progress is stopped, the play stops. I think that's sort of, it morphed into it eventually. Not 1940, but it started getting that way then. So then we had an exciting race. We had a national championship that was awarded, the AP poll had started a year before. We talked about that. That was a big way of determining the poll and the coaches voting and that. So there was a six-way run of teams that were really in it for that national championship and made some very difficult decisions for both the voters in the AP poll and others that were trying to make decisions. And even retroactively, it's hard to go back and look at this and say, okay, who really was that national champion? So the six teams that were in question, first of all, we had the Texas A&M Aggies football team. The Aggies ended up finishing with a record of 9-1, and they had defeated Fordham University in the 1941 Cotton Bowl Classic at the end of the season. Their star player was fullback John Kimbrough, and he was a unanimous pick for the 1940 All-America team, but they had a fantastic season at A&M, and they had their claims up there to see if possibly they could be the national champions. Their only loss was at Texas right at the end of the regular season in November 28th, and they lost that game by a touchdown, 7-0 to the Longhorns. So definitely a claim, but they had a loss in there, so that was a strike against them. The Boston College Eagles also had a tremendous season. They were in their final season under Coach Frank Leahy. The Eagles combined a perfect 11-0 record for Coach Leahy, including a 19-13 victory over number 4 Tennessee in the Sugar Bowl. And their big player was Gene Goodroll, and he was a consensus pick on the All-American team. So Boston College definitely in there for consideration. Now that Tennessee Vols team that they defeated also had excellent play under Coach Robert Neyland, and they made it all the way to the Sugar Bowl and faced the Boston College Eagles and lost in that close game. Now the Vols before the Sugar Bowl were 10-0 in the regular season, and they were selected as the national champions by the Dunkel system. Their big player was Bob Suffrage. He was a unanimous pick for the 1940 All-American team. Remember, the national champion was picked before bowl season. That's why we're saying they were 10-0 before the bowl, and that's how Tennessee made it in the Dunkel system as the champions. And remember, the Dunkel system was a mathematical system in that era that before the AP poll was sort of selecting national championships. So the Michigan Wolverines also were a tremendous team. They were a team on the rise. Coach Fritz Kreisler was at the helm, and the Wolverines had a 7-1 record. Its only loss came against what would become the national champion, Minnesota Golden Gophers, and we'll talk about them in a second. But that game score was 7-6 against Minnesota. The stars for the Wolverines, Tom Harmon, ended up winning the Heisman Trophy and the Maxwell Award, and he shared the backfield with a tremendous player in his own right, Forrest Avishevsky, and fullback Bob Westfall. And that tandem was a tremendous offensive power. Fritz Kreisler was a genius, as we know, at offensive development, and really got his teams fired up and ready to play. And you know that Minnesota was really good, and we'll bring them up next. They were coached under Bernie Bierman, and the Gophers were 8-0 in the season, won the Big Ten Championship, outscored their opponents by the total of 154-71. Their big player was halfback George Frank. He was the star, consensus All-American. He was third in the Heisman Trophy race, and they also had a really good signal caller, Bob Pawfroth, and he was selected as the team's most valuable player by the Minnesota constituents, and they ended up being the national champions voted by the Associated Press for the Golden Gophers. One team that really had another strong claim against them to be the national champions was the Stanford Indians. Of course, later we know that Stanford would be the Cardinal, but right now in 1940, they're still the Indians football team. Clark Shaughnessy was the leader and the head coach of Stanford. That team had a 10-0 record, including a victory over number 7 Nebraska in the Rose Bowl in 1941. We cover that on our Rose Bowl salutes that we did a year ago, and we're still running them, and you can find those on the front pages of Pigskin Dispatch. The final AP poll was conducted just before the Rose Bowl, with Stanford receiving 44 first place votes. And they trailed Minnesota 65 votes. Stanford was selected as national champions, though, by the polling system and the Williamson system, and retroactively by the Helms Foundation and the Billingsley Report. So quite a few choosing Stanford. We had, of course, the AP choosing Minnesota. The Wolverines lost to Minnesota, so they're sort of out. The Vols have a loss to Boston College. They're out. Boston College is undefeated. And, they probably could have some claims to say, hey, we are the national champions too. And A&M, well, they had one loss, but they did defeat Fordham. So very interesting in that whole thing. Now, the Tip Top 25 website, which we always like to look at and see what their take is on the whole thing, they've got some interesting picks. First of all, they add into the fray Washington, the Huskies. Who ended up winning the PCC title. And Stanford and Washington had a really good game and ended up playing to a very close score. And Stanford ended up winning that on a controversial touchdown for a 14-10 victory over the Huskies. And so they had some claims to fame, but Stanford had beaten them, so that sort of knocked them out of contention, according to everybody. And also Holy Cross got to get into the Tip Top 25 with an impressive showing that they had on the season, and had won some big games as well. So it comes down to who is the winner of that. Now, Tip Top 25 brings a case for Boston College, and they talk about it, because they were undefeated. They beat a highly ranked Tennessee team in the bowl game, which they weren't considering the bowl games back in the era, but retroactively, Tip Top 25 is. And so it ends up coming into what they think is it's a three-way tie, basically, between Minnesota, Stanford, and then Boston College in third place. Some look at it, maybe it's number one Stanford, number two Minnesota, Boston College in third. But every single poll in the way they look at it, except for one, Boston College is third in that, with either trailing Minnesota or Stanford. Out of the five that they pick, Minnesota wins four, and one of those four, they're tied with Stanford. So Minnesota, maybe they got it right in picking Minnesota as the top team, and beating a tough Michigan team by 1 point, that is no small feat in itself. So great job on that. Now, talking about Clark Shaughnessy. Now, he introduced the T formation in 1940, revolutionized college football, and still the basis for the game today. So it was a big event for that. As we said, Michigan's Tom Harmon won the Heisman Trophy. Talented quarterback and back known for his scrambling ability and passing accuracy, won that Heisman Trophy. The biggest upset of the year was Tennessee defeating Duke 13-0, and Northwestern had a surprising win over Syracuse. And the rivalries of Michigan and Ohio State and Army Navy, well, they remained fiercely contested. And of course, that Michigan Minnesota game was a fantastic game, 1-1 points. So that'd be one that would have been a great one to see that year. And there was some changes with the first down, and some scoring across the league was greatly increased. Dominant teams averaged just over 20 points per game, showcasing the evolving offensive strategy of that era. And the T formation was one that was really starting to bring it. There's still a lot of teams playing a single wing, but that T formation is coming on strong and going to put some scoring and put some fannies in the seats that watch those games. And you know, for an individual performance, some keys besides Harmon doing what he did. Stanford's Don Clark for passing yards, and Boston College's Al Koop for a lot of rushing yards, and some fantastic things that they did there. So that is your 1940 college football season, with some great teams, some great players, some legendary formations and coaches, and changes are about to really start happening. I can't emphasize that enough. I'm so excited to talk about 1941, but we still have to talk about the professional football season. That'll be the next episode of the Football History Rewind, but we have some other great Pigskin Dispatch episodes coming up in between. So till next time, have a great Gridiron Day.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.